Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Neither rain nor snow nor sleet, they say, can stop the U.S. mail. But how about email, faxes, cell phones, UPS, FedEx, and a giant recession? Could they stop it? Once the country subsidized the post office, without question, no more. The U.S. Postal Service is losing billions a year. The Postmaster General is asking Congress for permission to make some big cuts, including nixing Saturday delivery. But analysts say those won't be nearly enough. Can we save the mail? Can we imagine life without it? This hour, On Point, the fate of the U.S. mail. You can join the conversation. What do the post office, the postal service, the daily mail delivery mean to you? What do you think they mean now to the country? Could we live without it or with less of it? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Washington is Ed O'Keefe with The Washington Post, who writes the Post's Federal Eye blog. Ed, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So what's on the table from the Postal Service? Critics say it's not nearly enough, but what are they proposing to try and rein in? They're going to lose $7 billion in this fiscal year, which ends next month. How are they proposing to address that hole?
First thing they want is they want Congress to pass some short-term financial relief that would basically end mandated prepayments to a retiree health benefit plan that is designed to start paying for retiree benefits for people who retire after 2016. This is sort of the big secret at the Postal Service. While most people think about disappearing mailboxes and possibly ending delivery on Saturdays, this is their biggest problem because they have to pay as much as $7 billion into current and future retiree benefit programs each year right now after Congress mandated those payments back in 2006 when their financial situation was a little better. Now, things obviously not in good shape at all. Various House and Senate proposals moving through, and they're saying that President Obama will have to pass and or have to sign something by the end of September. Otherwise, they won't make those payments this year, and they could face as much as a $700 million shortfall.
So there's a union deal, a legal deal, a $5 to $7 billion hole every year. What else are they planning that might affect the way people actually experience getting the mail? I mean, I'm looking here at a freeze on executive salaries there and cuts to travel budgets. But what else that might affect the delivery of the mail?
Well, the big one right now, the one that they're definitely behind and pushing for, is an end to traditional Saturday mail delivery. However, your post office would remain open, express mail packages would be delivered, and P.O. boxes would still get mail on Saturdays. It's just you wouldn't see the mailman walking the streets on Saturdays. That has the potential to save them a lot of money and labor costs because you won't have those postal carriers walking the streets. Beyond that, they're considering closing there's a list of about 700 post offices across the country, mostly in urban downtown areas that they would consider closing as well. The theory being that if you've got two post offices about eight blocks apart, you could close one that isn't as busy as the other one and make people all go to that one.
For example, 700. And we're posting a list of those at our website, onpointradio.org, if people want to see it, Ed. But I'm sorry.
But yeah, and the important thing to remember is while there are 700 on there, those are the only 700 that are going to be seriously considered.
Okay.
I had a guy at the Postal Service confess to me privately that of that 700, only about 200 are likely to close. And again, in the most urban, condensed areas of the country where, you know, two close or nearby post offices aren't necessarily, you know, financially a smart thing to do right now. So obviously there will be some resistance to that. Lawmakers certainly don't want to have Postal Service interrupted nearing an election year, and they don't want these types of things to happen sort of in secret without good explanation. But for now, at least, the Postal Service being very coy about how it is they're going to go about closing any potential post office.
So closing post offices, maybe, cutting back on Saturday service they're asking for. I mean, I was struck looking at this, Ed, that reading here that as recently as the 1950s, lots of Americans were obliged to collect their mail from the post office, to go down to their little box rather than getting those daily delivery at home. And the mandatory requirement for six-day service didn't begin until the 1970s, so it's not as though it's always been there.
Right, and if you look at polling, in fact, I think it was in June that Gallup did a survey nationally, found that about 60% of Americans were okay with the idea of not getting their mail on Saturday. Now, the flip that argument around, you talk to the unions, you talk to some loyalists at the Postal Service, they say, look, if we're cutting a day of service, how the heck do we expect to be able to boost our profits and you know, be able to provide better service or be able to reap more profits in the future if we're actually cutting a day of service. And what happens if we face this financial situation 10, 15 years from now again? Do we cut Friday? Do we cut Tuesday? Do we go to 3 days a week? Or what other options are there going to be at that point? So, you know, they're thinking about it, obviously, but it does look as if we're headed towards a situation where mail will not be delivered on Saturday, but the post office will be open so that when you go out and run your errands, you can at least drop off the mail, pick up the package, or do whatever else you need to.
In the middle of everything else, the post office was on the president's mind yesterday, interestingly, up at that big town hall meeting in New Hampshire. Here's a little tape from there where he, in the middle of his health care speech and interaction, he alludes to the postal service's woes. He was asked if private insurers would be able to ask with a public health care option.
I think private insurers should be able to compete. They do it all the time. I mean, if you think about it, you know, UPS and FedEx are doing just fine, right? No, they are. I mean, it's the post office that's always having problems.
Whoa, from the president's lips, it's on his mind, Ed. I mean, they're talking about a couple of changes in service. There's a big pushback in Congress on that. But as you know, Ed, critics are saying it's not nearly enough change that they're proposing here, that it's going to take a lot more radical change to save the Postal Service.
Yeah, it is. And actually, first on what the president said there, I checked with his aides after that because I heard that as well.
Yeah.
As far as they can tell, these are his first public comments about the Postal Service ever as president. So it's kind of disappointing if you work at the post office,
right,
and have the big boss
always having
fun
trouble
of your financial situation,
yeah,
and his first comments about you. And look, they make it very clear they stand by the efforts underway in the House and the Senate. They understand the unprecedented, unsustainable financial situation they face right now, and they're looking forward to working with lawmakers on long-term solutions. What are those long-term solutions? In talking to people, it seems to be a few things. One, we're going to have to adjust to the idea that while we have mail and while we have the Postal Service, it is going to be one of those things that sort of slips back and becomes less of an important, less of a prominent aspect of American society. You could say the same about things like, the slide ruler or typewriters, you know, things like that are still out there, still might be used by some people, but aren't used as often. And certainly, you know, there is a need for it. There is a desire to have it, but the demand is obviously not there. In fact, I don't mean to get so personal, but I was thinking about this the other day. You know, I'm getting married in a month.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of another way to inform my guests that I want them to come than to put an invitation in the mail. I could never email them. I could never Facebook them and say, hey, come to my wedding in September. You need to be able to send things through the mail, whether it's personal or something else, perhaps.
And whether the post office or somebody else delivers it eventually.
That's a big question. You're right. And our wedding invitation is going to be enough to move the Postal Service into the future? Probably not. They've talked about the idea of possibly providing other services at post offices. Right now you can walk in and get your passport done, and you pay a small fee, some of which goes to the post office, the rest goes to the passport office. They, at a hearing just last week, suggested, you know, if you go to Japan, you go to Australia, you go to France, you can get other things done at post offices. You can get your driver's license renewed, you can buy insurance, you can get minutes added to your cell phone.
Do your banking,
you can do some banking, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So perhaps that's something we should talk about. They're not actively doing it, they're not devoting any resources or money to it yet, but they suggested maybe Congress should give us the opportunity to do that. There didn't really seem to be much support for that, at least at the time. But, you know, that's another possibility as well.
Ed O'Keefe, thanks so very much for filling us in. Best wishes on your impending wedding, Ed.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Ed O'Keefe of The Washington Post. With me now from Potomac, Maryland, is A. Lee Fritschler. He's a professor of public policy at George Mason University, served as chairman of the U.S. Postal Regulatory Commission under President Carter. He co-authored a big study last year on the future of universal postal service. Lee Fritschler, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Good to be on point.
It's great to have you. We're reading Joe Nocera in the New York Times. He poses the question, do we even still need the government to deliver the mail anymore? To me, he writes, the answer is obvious, no. Now, I love getting mail. I love seeing the postman on the street, but do we need it, Lee?
We're in a time of big change. The Postal Service has been a very important part of American history and the development of American democracy. In the early days, we depended upon it. Alas, times have changed, and our means of communication are much different from what they were 50, 100 years ago. And the Postal Service will be forced, one way or another, to conform to a new business model. And you said earlier that there's been a lot of change in the Postal Service over the years. That's for sure.
Over long stretches of time, decades and even centuries.
Yeah, nothing's really written in concrete in that respect. I think there will be a post office for many, many years into the future. My vision or suggestion would be that the Postal Service be liberated from congressional control to a much greater extent than it is now, and it become eventually a regulated industry, and we can follow the telecom model to some extent. I mean,
as in a business out there competing with what, FedEx and UPS and others?
I mean, it would be a regulated business.
Mm-hmm.
The regulator would be the Postal Regulatory Commission, and the FCC regulates telecom in the United States. And you know, the regulator says you will charge no more than X, say 50 cents, for a first-class letter delivered anywhere in the United States.
And daily delivery, the guy in the pith helmet, the woman up and down the street in the post.
The regulator would say to the Postal Service, you figure out how to do it, and maybe we go for 5 days a week. Some of it might have to be contracted out. You might want to deliver utility bills in downtown New York for 10 cents apiece instead of 35 cents apiece.
Lee Pritchler, if you'd be good enough to stand by for a minute, there's a lot we want to get into with you, and we appreciate your being with us today. Simon and Garfunkel behind us. Why don't you write me? Well, do it while you've got the chance. We're talking about the U.S. Postal Service and its future. Do we still need the U.S. mail? This is On Point.
Why don't you write me a letter? Would brighten my lonely.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the U.S. Postal Service in big trouble, maybe due for a radical overhaul, maybe one day going away as we know it. We've been talking with Lee Fritchler from George Mason University. He's former chairman of the U.S. Postal Regulatory Commission. Also with us now from New York City is Richard John. He's a historian who teaches at Columbia University's Journalism School. He's the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse, as in Morse code. He also contributed to last year's big report for the Postal Regulatory Commission. Richard John, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We're going to look at the challenges that the U.S. Postal Service is facing now. But what has it meant to us as a nation over these 234 years? And does it matter, as a historian, do you think it matters if it should go away? We've got lots of options now.
Well, as Lee mentioned, the role of the post office in American cultural and political history would be hard to overstate for most of the first 100 years of our nation's existence. Mm-hmm. It ineffectively subsidized or underwrote the circulation of information, politics, and culture.
Newspapers,
and magazines.
Mm-hmm.
You could say without the post office, you would not have had the political democracy that Alexis de Tocqueville wrote about in his Democracy in America.
Subsidized them by keeping their delivery cheap so that they were dispersed all over the young country and people had a sense of what was going on, what was being talked about.
Well, that's true, and it was subsidized specifically by what we today call first-class mail, specifically business mail. There was a massive subsidy from the merchants and the manufacturers of the country who were paying, and then the letter writers after the 1840s,
mm-hmm.
to newspapers and magazines.
So they paid more so that newspapers and magazines could be delivered for less, making it economically viable?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it ceased to be economically viable in the 1840s, Congress picked up the tab, and it continued to subsidize the post office with very little public outrage for well over 100 years. So the current debate over postal deficits is an anomaly. Through most of our history, we've been perfectly content to spend a certain amount of money to keep the post office afloat.
But we didn't have all the options then that we have now. Email, just for starters, never mind FedEx and UPS and fax and all the rest. To your mind, as an historian, does that change the equation? Is the need, the central role that was played, still there? Would it leave a void if it were gone or just be filled by options?
It certainly changes it dramatically. The post office is much less important today than it was in 1960 or certainly in 1920. One of the changes that I think is worth reflecting on as citizens is that we no longer have these subsidies for newspapers and magazines. And in an age when the print media, newspaper magazines, is in deep trouble, I think this is a cause for reflection and perhaps for concern. The direction of the subsidy seems to have shifted over the course of, say, the last 30 years. We are first-class mail has gone way down. The what we call
relatively speaking. Yes,
exactly. In United States, still has over half the mail in the world. I mean, it's still an enormous institution. The increase has been in advertising circulars, or what we used to call junk mail, or what the Postal Service has redefined somewhat artfully as a standard mail.
It seems like it many days. It's the typical. Is first class mail subsidizing the junk mail now? Is that what?
Well, you can get into an argument with economists about that, and you can get an argument with the Postal Regulatory Commission about that. But the main point is that we are no longer subsidizing newspapers and magazines to the extent that we were, and if you believe that the public discourse that is fostered by newspapers and magazines is important to the civic health of the nation, as I do, I think that's a cause for concern.
Of course, a lot of them are online now as well. Lee Fritzler. So here we are, big deficit right now. The country less willing, it appears, to subsidize, to pay for that deficit, given all the other options out there. And a lot of call for the post office, the postal service, to be run more like a business. I mean, you know, we're talking about maybe banking and insurance and cell phones for sale in there, and you name it. I mean, it sounds like they'll open up a Orange Julius and a Burger King in the post offices soon.
Maybe it is,
but is that what you're describing? It would just turn into like a mini mart with postal delivery attached?
I think that's not really feasible. It would put a government organization in direct competition with all the sorts of vendors that provide the sorts of things you just mentioned, and that wouldn't be a wise intervention in the economy, it seems to me.
But doesn't it have to be competitive in some sense to close its deficit if that's going to be required?
I think it'll be, first of all, a lot smaller than it is now. We have to think about downsizing. By the way, moving to five-day delivery in our survey, like the Gallup poll, which Mr. O'Keefe mentioned, is okay with about 68% of the American population, according to our survey. So that's a $3 or $4 billion a year savings right there. There are proposals that the Postal Service perform more government functions in its facilities. For example, perhaps tax advice. If, in fact, God forbid, we have another draft, the Postal Service is involved in that activity, too. Some have suggested that perhaps the Postal Service could do the U.S. Census data collection door-to-door every 10 years. When that is done, there are those sorts of activities. But then, as Richard John and others have said, there's always going to be a need for hard copy delivery. We're always going to have wedding invitations to send out, and some of them will go by email, but some will go by surface mail, hard copy. And the Postal Service is an absolutely marvelous, wonderful machine for what's called the last mile of delivery. It's actually the last 10 miles, but it's generally referred to as the last mile. That is, they know how to get stuff into your mailbox in an almost miraculous sort of
efficient way. Yes.
And that's worth something.
But maybe to be capitalized on in ways that it's not. I mean, I'm reading in business publications, you know, it sounds almost like they want, you know, a mailman to wear, I don't know, logos on their uniforms for commercial interest, maybe sing me a jingle at my door because they're coming every, you know, that's what that often means in the American open economy. When you've got that access, you turn it into a marketing potential. I don't know what all, Lee.
Well, it would be very difficult for other organizations to compete with the Postal Service in local delivery. First of all, these other companies would have to be licensed. Their carriers would have to be uniformed, and all that would have to be done through some sort of regulatory device.
I see FedEx on my block every week, and UPS and others.
That's right, and they're licensed, and they're uniformed, and they're very, very effective. They don't deliver letters, by and large, and they don't have the huge volume of mail that which is diminishing, but which the mail carrier carries. I think the basic question, and there are really two questions we haven't discussed yet.
Yes.
One is that the predominant entry into the mail is advertising mail. And as Richard Johns said, the post office changed that from advertising mail to standard mail, artfully, a few years ago, which I think was a political mistake.
You're talking about all the junk mail we get all the time, commonly referred to.
Well, now standard mail. And, you know, the question is, why do we need a government agency to deliver advertising mail? It seems to me that kind of a subsidy is just unfair, and I don't think the American public would want to see that happen.
It's happening right now, though. There are billions in the red, and you're saying that's, in effect, a subsidy for the junk mail we get. So we're paying for it.
And when this becomes more widely known, I think you will find a very negative reaction to it.
And your second big point?
The other is the environmental movement. One cannot go to a postal meeting in Europe without encountering strong environmentalists present. And the argument in Europe is really against advertising mail, the money it costs, the trees it costs to produce the paper, and then the recycling of it, and the pollution that's caused by delivering it door to door. This is just beginning in the United States. Someone estimated that the average home gets 75 pounds of advertising mail per year in their mailboxes. And there's just going to come a point when people will say, you know, what are we doing here? We don't need this kind of service, especially one which is subsidized by the government.
Lee Fritzler, Richard John, if you'd stand by for a moment, we've got lots of callers with ideas about the U.S. mail, as you might imagine. Let me begin to turn to them. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, David. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So it seems to me that the mail service is a little bit like vinyl records and you know, real physical newspapers, in that there's a lot of sentimental attachment to them, and people among people that grew up listening to using those technologies. But they're outmoded now, more or less. So I'm 27. I do everything online. I haven't sent a letter in years since I've started being able to pay bills online, and more or less the only mail that I get is junk mail. So other than sending packages, which UPS and FedEx do also, it doesn't seem to me like there's that much useful service being provided by the Postal Service.
What about bills, David? Don't you get a lot of bills in the mail?
It's online now. Like, I pay all my bills online.
And
You know, the gas company, the internet company, the even my tuition and stuff like that, everything's online.
You heard Ed O'Keefe earlier saying he's getting married. He wants to send out wedding invitations. What about that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, so there are some small number of things where it would be nice to have it in paper, but is that worth subsidizing a huge machine? You know, is there sort of huge amount of infrastructure that's needed for those?
I take your point. I mean, I'm sentimental about it in the extreme, but I do take your point. Richard John, you're the historian. There's your 27-year-old fellow countryman who hasn't mailed a letter in 5 years, maybe, who says, you know, do we really still need this?
Well, a couple of thoughts. David lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He doesn't live in the Great Plains or in a small town in the South, where there remains a strong attachment to local post offices. Whether or not we should subsidize that or not is an interesting question. It's a policy question. Alaskans, I have heard anecdotally, grow accustomed to transporting building materials through the mail because it's much more expensive through FedEx and UPS. Second point is that FedEx and UPS do not have the kind of federal mandate. They could go out of business. They could go into another business.
Right.
And they do not want to have, as I understand, the kind of universal service obligation that, which is a term of art in and of itself, that the USPS has. And should there come some sort of a crisis, some sort of a cyber attack, some sort of a debacle that we are completely unprepared for, we would have the USPS in the background. I remember David Brin wrote a novel about a post-nuclear Holocaust where the postman was still delivering his round. So I think there is a genuine a national interest. I recognize young people are not using the mail, but it's a big country, and circumstances can change, and the Postal Service has been remarkably enduring and I think remarkably effective. I think this last mile issue is worth underscoring. It's easy to criticize government agencies. We've done it throughout our history. Somewhat harder to criticize corporations because they're less public. They have secrecy. But the Postal Service has done a pretty good job for an enormous number of people over an extraordinary long period of time. And I think that's a legacy that we would not want to squander without serious reflection.
Let's get a call from Buffalo, New York. And Robert. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I got to say one thing since you mentioned Ben Franklin on the side. You and Jane must have an incredible support staff and everybody.
Yes, we do.
Which you do. But you cannot be, unless you're the general all-around genius Ben Franklin is.
No, certainly not.
Anyway, I've heard these arguments about every 15 years, and the post office is obligated to deliver anywhere and everywhere. They still have a plane that delivers mail to very remote Idaho. And the private companies, UPS and all that, I mean, they're cherry-picking.
So you don't think we could lean on these commercial delivery services to step into the breach if the Postal Service went away or got cut way back?
No, not so much that. There's places, UPS and DHL, won't deliver.
They won't now because the Postal Service, but it's a good point, Robert. Let me pick it up. Lee Fritschler, if imagine, and I think I've read you saying, you know, 20, 30 years out, it's possible to see no or a very small U.S. Postal Service. What do you think the free market would do with that void, if it's a void? Would it step in? Would universal service, the guarantee that wherever you are in this country as an American, you can get delivery, would that remain somehow in the market, or do you think it'd go away?
It would depend on how the structure was set up. If there was a regulatory system which defined universal service in a reasonable way, in order to get a license to deliver, one would have to make those calls and make those deliveries. Right now, the Federal Express and UPS deliver everywhere in the United States. And where they don't, by the way, they will collaborate with the U.S. Mail to deliver parcels to remote parts of Alaska, for example. It seems to me the basic principle is that the mailer should be willing to pay what it costs to get something delivered. And if you are willing to pay the cost of delivery, the market will find a way to do it, it seems to me. There will be somebody who will deliver things if the cost plus some profit is in the fee.
What would that be on a first-class letter today if the entire cost were reflected in that stamp, Lee?
Oh, I think it is reflected today.
Oh, I thought...
I think the entire cost of first-class mail is reflected in the 44-cent rate. Or is it 43?
But the commercial mailers, you're saying, are getting a little bit of a free ride there, or Richard John did.
Well, I think it's a very complicated question, as Richard points out. There are all kinds of things which commercial mailers do in order to qualify for lower rates. For example, they pre-sort the mail in their own facilities and then deliver it to a regional center, and that saves the Postal Service a lot of money. Some local commercial mailers will actually pre-sort mail down to what's called a route walking sequence. So,
right.
It just goes into the hands of the postman. It's already pre-sorted, and he or she just delivers it as they move along their route.
But I'll be all right. I'm just missing you. And this is me kissing you. X's and O's. A letter from home.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the U.S. Postal Service in big trouble, maybe due for a radical overhaul, maybe one day going away as we know it. Lee Fritzler is with us. He's professor of public policy at George Mason University, joins us from Potomac, Maryland, former chairman of the U.S. Postal Regulatory Commission. And with us from New York City, Richard John. He's an historian of the U.S. Postal Service, professor at Columbia University, author of Spreading the News. We've got a call right here from Ames, Iowa, and Tim. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating topic for me. I'm a stamp collector, and
this is
just right up my alley.
Yeah.
But
you can collect email addresses, Tim.
Beg pardon?
You can collect email addresses, maybe.
Right. Oh, it wouldn't be the same.
No, it wouldn't.
Well, I'm also a high school teacher, and recently I asked my students to address envelopes to their parents because we were having parent-teacher conferences, and I wanted to confirm the time that the parent was going to come. And, you know, these are bright young people, and several of them didn't even know how to address their envelopes. One put a phone number on there, another put the zip code before the city and state, and, you know, I had just blithely assumed that these young people would know how to do that. And it was just an interesting reminder to me that, you know, for me, I use the U.S. mail a lot. Again, for the reasons I mentioned, but for these young folks, it's text messaging and email and Facebook and all of that.
And who knows anybody's address? You know where they live and don't know how to address an envelope. It's a great anecdote, Tim. Thank you for sharing that with us from Ames. Let me get another call right here from Providence, Rhode Island, and Peter. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. What do you know?
I'm a mailman walking the beat right now, actually.
All right.
I have a show every day.
All right.
And I'm not sure what's going to happen with the post office from the year on out. What I am concerned about is the post office and my union. And if they go, like, for five-day delivery, or if they do more like a business model, how will that affect my union and how will affect my ability to earn a living? I know the UPS doesn't have a union. I don't think FedEx does either. A lot of their employees are part-timers. They work, like, 4 hours a day and that kind of stuff and work their way up into an actual job, like a
roots,
full-time job.
Yeah. Peter, we'll go to that question. Let me ask you, as a mailman, they're walking the beat. I mean, when you're at the post office with your colleagues, is there much talk about the future? Is there concern about the future of the Postal Service with mailmen like you, mail carriers?
Yeah, all the time, yeah. A lot of the guys, especially the union guys, the union stewards and stuff, they don't think this five-day delivery is going to be happening in the future, but then a lot of the managers say they do. So I don't know where it's going to happen, what's going to happen in the future. I don't know who to believe. A few months ago, I thought this never would have happened, but the more and more they push for it, the more I'm concerned.
We'll pick it up. Peter, good luck on your rounds there, and thank you for your mail delivery service. Lee Fritzler, what about it? It's a big union, a lot of employees.
700,000 people working for the Postal Service today. Mm-hmm. That's one of the largest employers in the United States, public or private. And, of course, there are many, many people in the private sector whose jobs depend upon the Postal Service, printing, advertising mail, and you can imagine the number. Some would say it's 4 or 5% of the gross domestic product. So we have to do some planning. We have to plan for a future that's going to look very different from the way things looked 10 years ago and the way things look today. We have to develop a new model. We have to find a way for the Postal Service to be smaller, more efficient, profitable, competitive. I think that's possible, but the political obstacles to change are enormous.
Does that mean the mail carrier's pay package is going to be smaller? He looks at FedEx and UPS, and it doesn't look as lush over there. You may have few hours to work.
Generally, the employees of UPS and Federal Express are paid more. Mm. Postal Service employees are well paid at the moment, and I think their pay will maintain itself as long as the institution gets to the right size. If it doesn't, the question will be how much is the American public willing to subsidize the Postal Service to stay at its current size and its current wage levels?
Lee, when you say its current size, do you mean its current range of services as well, not just the number of staff, but everything it does?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And numbers of days of delivery. Actually, the Postal Service, I think, has done a very good job in the last 10 years of downsizing. It's gone from almost 900,000 employees to something over 700,000, and it's, of course, used automation. But my fear is they've done just about all they can to downsize, and now they really need to a new model. I need to put one footnote in here.
Yes, sir.
We haven't discussed this. There's a lot going on in the postal world outside of the United States. In the European Union, for example, a position has been taken by the European Commission that by 2011, that's a little more than a year from now,
yeah,
all postal services in all EU countries will be liberalized or privatized. And they are moving in that direction very, very rapidly. I think there are many, many lessons that we can learn from Europe, although each country in Europe is a lot smaller than the United States and the United States Postal Service. But the whole business model of postal services in Europe is changing very, very dramatically.
Describe some of that for us. How are they responding? 2011 soon and to be privatized. What are some sorts of things that European postal services are doing?
It's been going on for a considerable number of years now, so we're in the sixth or seventh year anyway in most countries.
And what are they doing?
They're competing. They're getting into other kinds of operations, warehousing, printing of catalogs, for example, as well as delivering them. There are private organizations cropping up, which are creating employment. They're closing post office buildings very, very rapidly around Europe. Post offices now are located increasingly in the equivalent of a 7-Eleven in England and other places in Europe, so that when people come in to do their shopping, there's a postal booth in the back, which is manned, and they do their postal business in these convenience stores. There is a lot of movement. By the way, that's a point which should be mentioned, too. I mean, it's very expensive to maintain these standalone facilities.
Sure.
Around the country, and there's thousands of them. If you could run the postal service in the back of a Giant, well, the Giant is our grocery store here, or in something like a 7-Eleven, it would be much less expensive to do. And I think the postal service needs the freedom to go ahead and do that. Now, right now, to get back to a point we were talking about earlier, closing a post office requires a regulatory approval in the United States, and politically, Congress steps in, or a congressperson, almost every time the Postal Service brings up the closing of X, Y, or Z post office. It is a nightmare. And, you know, the Congress will on the one hand say, we wish they'd operate as a business, and on the other hand, it says, no matter how inefficient the postal facility in my district is, if you close it, you're in trouble.
We must have it. Richard John, I want to get your historian's perspective on this move to privatization in Europe and maybe here. Let me get a caller from Lincoln, Nebraska first. Roger in Lincoln, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
How are you today?
Well.
Yeah. You know, I would really find it appalling if we close the postal service off, and I think that some of the ideas that it could be run more efficiently or better are well taken. I think that that's a poor place for private industry, and I heard the gentleman speak about what they're doing in the EU and going privatized.
Yes.
I'm a business person myself, and the bottom, I'm a small business, and I do the modeling.
And
the bottom line of a business is to make money. It's not to, you know, we service our clients, but if a business is making money, it's going to do just things to make that happen. And here in Nebraska, you have small towns out in the Sandhills, even in northeast Nebraska, that are, you know, five, six, or seven people.
Right.
People are going to get, if I'm running a business model, those places are just not going to get service.
So you're a free market guy, but you're a little worried about the free market when it comes to postal delivery.
Well, postal, I see what the free market did to our financial system in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people get in those positions, and they certainly put money ahead of people. And I think the Postal Service for a long time, for 100 years, has really done a very good job of getting mail delivered to everybody as fairly as they could. And I heard an early caller talk about, you know, the great job that DHL and Federal Express do. But they, you know, they take the cream of the cream. They just take what they can, and they if they charge what it took to get a letter to, you know, Wheaton, Nebraska,
yeah,
those people would be paying a lot of money for that one letter.
We've got a big federal deficit now, Roger. The post office is part of that. $7 billion in the red this fiscal year. What about that? Should we just bite the bullet, pay for it anyway, or?
Well, I think that, many things can be run more efficiently, and I'm sure the Postal Service, and I heard the gentleman talk about maybe allowing the postal offices to be in other buildings and businesses. There's, I think, some good ideas out there. I think that cutting the post office, I mean, one of the things that's amazing about this country is you can, we take it so for granted. I put a stamp on a letter, put it in the mailbox, and I know it's going to get to where I send it to.
It's pretty cool.
I've been in other countries, and I've sent letters, and I don't know for sure if they're ever going to get there. I never question that here. I mean, that's the kind of reputation the post office has for any letter, not just an expensive package that I'm sending somewhere, but it's a tremendous history.
And 40 cents, and you know it's going to be there. Roger, I appreciate your perspective from Nebraska. It's an important one. Richard John, you're listening here. Lee Fritzler is describing the super privatization going on in Europe. They're going to have to compete in just a year and a half or two. What about privatization in the U.S. Postal Service, historian John?
Well, we've had competition between the post office and private mail carriers and telegraph companies for a very, very long time. This is not new. And the idea of having post offices in the back of a store, I smiled when I heard that, because, of course, that's not new either. That's right. The way post offices were structured.
General store, yeah.
We didn't have freestanding post offices. So the idea that there's a sharp line between public and private is somewhat misleading. What I find interesting historically is that the private mail delivery companies that emerged, say, in the 1840s, or the private express companies that carried parcels much...
Pony Express. And
well, so, yeah, that's right. But there were actually Wells Fargo, American Express. American Express carried parcels long before it got into the credit card business.
Right.
Those companies were pushed out by the post office with very little public concern because the post office was perceived to be superior, just as the caller from Nebraska said. And I don't know that would be the perception today with FedEx and UPS, but there is a great deal of goodwill that is part of the civic mandate of the post office that is very different from the mandate, say, of a FedEx or UPS, which is a profit-making corporation. And on this point, if you begin to compare corporations in the United States, corporations in Europe, the relationship between those corporations and their shareholders is quite a bit different. And shareholders tend to have more power and authority in Europe than they do in the United States. Furthermore, it's easier for these privatized postal services or partially privatized postal services in Europe, such as the Swiss Post, for example, to move into internet, to move into new businesses because of the longstanding legacy of a statism of central government. So to make a simple analogy between the United States and Europe, their privatizing where not, begs two questions. One, would a privatized post office have the same kind of guarantees through shareholder rights and responsibilities that they do in Europe? And second, would it be able to move into the same kind of markets that the Swiss Post does by moving into internet services? Is that possible? And I do believe that as long as we maintain the core of the U.S. Postal Service, which is that it has a civic mandate to provide basic services to all Americans, and that certain kinds of information are more important to circulate than others, independent of market criteria, that the institution has a future. As when it becomes perceived that the USPS is nothing but a boondoggle for junk mailers, then I think the institution is doomed.
Mm. Krista in Berkshire, Vermont. You're on the air, Krista. Big stuff here.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
My concern about the post office problem is my concern for our language. I work with children from the first to the fifth grade.
Yes.
And I notice already Twitter and email has reduced our language to a point of very abbreviated words. Words have been replaced, replacing meaningful words. And so where are we going in the long run with our language structure if we have no way of actually having the time and the space to express our thoughts on a piece of paper? And what will it do to our literature? That's my question.
It's a great question, Krista, hanging over all kinds of communication these days, but certainly without letters. If we're just tweeting, things get awfully abbreviated. Of course, many people aren't writing letters anymore anyway, but others are. I've got an email here from Garnett, to your point, Krista, saying, I can't imagine not having the mail service. Both of my boys are in the military, and I cherish the handwritten letters sent to me when they have no cell or email service. I know my sons and our troops also could not get through their deployments without those letters from home. Thanks for that, Garnett. Lee Fritzler, there's a lot of a big cultural component here. It's not just an economic issue. There's civic issues that Richard John points to. There is that deficit. And then there's the, you know, there's the serviceman or woman and their family at home who want that letter and mom or dad's signature at the bottom, or their son or daughter's.
Well, as a professor, I would be hard-pressed to disagree with any of that. My point would simply be, yes, and it's valuable, and it costs money to do it, and we ought to be willing to pay for it individually or through our taxes. I happen to think that if letters are important to a person, they might have to pay 50, 60, 70 cents to get it delivered, and they are the ones who should pay for it. I don't think we all should be taxed for that particular purpose. On the other hand, the civic responsibilities of the Postal Service traditionally are a little harder for me to put my arms around. I enjoy listening to my good friend Richard John, who's a brilliant historian. I just don't quite see how the Postal Service fits in these days or into the future into the civic purposes picture, as it did so brilliantly in the past couple hundred years. So
we're going to have to leave it right there today. I'm afraid we're up against our clock. But that's the big question, and it hangs over the U.S. Postal Service. Lee Fritzler at George Mason University, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Richard John at Columbia, thanks for joining us, Richard John.
Thanks so much, Sean.
We'll go out with Who Could Forget, the Marvelettes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.